Welcome to Share Talk, the only podcast where investors come first.
Good morning and welcome to Share Talk. Today we have got the chairman of Red Rock Resources on, Andrew Bell. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Now, you put out a update reference the Steelmen Limited investment, and if we can sort of break it down into some nice bite-sized chunks, first thing I would like to cover is reference the loan. There seems to be a lot of ambiguity out there on the bulletin boards. So could you sort of give us a brief summary of the loan and how it's been set up?
This loan, call it about, it's about $4 million. Just over. The loan is set up as a back-to-back, so far as we can make it. In other words, we're borrowing enough money to lend the required amount of euros to Steelmen for them to complete the plant. The interest rate is matched. We borrow at 13%, we lend at 13%. The fees are matched in terms of upfront fees. The maturity is almost matched in that we are lending for 8 months. And with a possible rollover for 8 months at another fee, we are borrowing for 12 months with a possible 8 month rollover of that. The repayments are not precisely matched because we don't expect necessarily to be repaid for 8 months. But after a 3 month holiday, we will start having to make repayments, so that at the end of the 1 year, we would have a 75% payback and then maybe rolling the rest. If the borrower rolls after 8 months with us, then they have amortizing payments the next 8 months. So it's pretty well matched, except for the period between 3 and 8 months when we will be making payments without necessarily getting paid back. However, the feature we've put in there is that we start off with getting 16% of their company equity as a fee. And after September, in other words, after 3 months, that starts to go up at 1% a month. So they're very strongly incentivized to repay us quickly. And although they know that once they're in production at the end of the year, they can get, I've been told, a trade-based facility, which will be much cheaper for them, and therefore they'd retire our debt. We understand that there is a possibility they would actually be able to get finance earlier. What they needed to do was order long lead time items and finish a property transaction on which there'd been some litigation on title. They got it solved. That payment was meant to be made by the end of the month. That's June. So we provided them with something very useful to them, but comparatively expensive, particularly in terms of equity, which they therefore have strong motive to repay quickly.
Now, if we can have a look at the sort of ongoing arrangement then, why was it not able for them to go and obtain the finance themselves directly, or was it a case of you were in the right place at the right time?
I think we're in the right place at the right time. Bosnia is a place not everyone understands. I think we do feel we understand it. People will take some time to familiarize themselves with country risk, to familiarize themselves with the business risks, which is the production of a product which is used in the steel industry, ferrosilicon, and they would have to take some time to familiarize themselves with a lot of other things about the business, including going out and visiting the plant. We have a pretty good starting place in terms of understanding steel feed materials, After all, we've been involved in manganese, which means we've known about ferromanganese, for example, for quite some time. And we know who the customers are in this case, unlikely to be. And we're actually looking for a high quality business that we could invest in to replace partially what we expect to be a gradual liquidation or fast liquidation of our manganese position. So I think we're in the right place at the right time. And the other thing is that from their point of view, they have been through a long process that's involved investing a lot of money, maybe 10 million euros so far, in refurbishing this plant and buying things. And they had also had this property issue to resolve when KPMG did the due diligence for them in 2015. They uncovered the fact that the people who that there was this property dispute, which I think goes back to the time of privatization back in the 90s, have never been resolved. And a couple of things happened. First of all, the litigation was the legal proceedings were successful. The man who was causing the greatest trouble actually died, and then a settlement was reached with some other people. And the settlement was to be paid by the end of June. So that had sort of come to a head and could be solved. And they just needed the last tranche of money, like the keystone of the arch, to make everything work, to put it together. And that was a relatively small amount compared with all the money that's been put into this. But it needed to be that, because all the other things couldn't happen without it. And we were in a position to do that. And they'd also been through, I think, the experience of one other lender who was more of a lending institution, who had looked at this and found it too complex for them. And we came along and we were able to use a lot of that draft documentation. And so act relatively quickly.
Now, in relation to the loan there, you touched upon the sort of near-term news that could be happening in relation to your manganese project at Shippy. Is there any clause in this loan and the arrangement so that that money that comes in could be utilised to pay the debt off immediately so that you don't have any sort of interest payments? And if that happens before the time of the first payment, is that your plan?
If we get money out of the sale of GP from the manganese, we would use that to pay down all or most of the loan, and that would not be subject to any early prepayment penalty.
Okay, then. If we can have sort of a brief summary, then, of what is actually happening with that sale.
Well, in that, there are other public companies involved. We are not in a position to say anything, even if we happen to know it for some reason, about the process of those sale and IPO proceedings until there is an official statement by GP, which can be announced by Pallinghurst Resources in South Africa and by ourselves and others. We have had a fairly regular flow of public announcements, which have been coordinated with Jupiter Pallinghurst. And there will continue to be announcements like that, but in between them, there's obviously a limit to what I can say.
If we can have a quick look back at Steelmen, if the project needs further funding down the line, what will your position be there, and what are the potential ways of going forward? Could there be a potential for effectively providing a loan again at a low risk basis to yourself, and then obviously gaining more equity in the project?
Yes, our ideal position perhaps is not, we can go up to 30% if they take some time to repay us. Our ideal position perhaps is that by the end of the year, we have, say, 20% beginning of next year, and they repay us and we have our money back, because at that point, we've got a 20% stake in the business. All of our money essentially has come back. The net costs to us of acquiring that 20% are quite negligible. And that was a business which from the first furnace will be, it expects having annualized sales of about 35 million euros or so, and a reasonable EBITDA on that. They're forecasting 7 million euros, but that, of course, that's a residual, and I can't say, you know, what prices are going to do. The sales level is more predictable, and I think gives an idea of the scale of the business. So if in year one, you're fairly soon moving towards an annualized 35 million euros, and we have, say, 20% of that, which is 7 million euros, with a profit margin in there, we'll have done quite well. And if then either by internal or external capital or combination of the two, and then maybe third-party loans from financiers, we are able to build the second furnace there, we can expand production quite fast. And remember that this is an area that is, that has traditionally produced ferrosilicon as far back as the 1970s from this plant. That when the facility was broken up, the smaller part has been in the hands of a private Italian business for about 12 years who have been successfully selling ferrosilicon. And so we'll be selling ferrosilicon to large European steel companies. And we expect that to be a good business with a demand that's well established and of which we can get an increasing part.
Now, obviously, you've said there about the sort of ferrosilicon and microsilica, which is effectively a byproduct of the process. Could you highlight what these sort of products are and what they're used for, just for the people that haven't got the prime knowledge of that?
Well, it's like, you know, when we talk about manganese, people sometimes, because they don't come across it in their daily lives, they don't know what it's used for. Of course, 95% of manganese is used in steel production, because it improves some of the qualities of the steel. So, for example, if you have normal stainless steel cutlery, it will have some manganese in it. Ferrosilicon, similarly, is used in the steel industry, and that's about the steel industry, of course, is huge. It dwarfs all other metals. And so there are all kinds of different metals that are used and necessary in steel production. Manganese is only one. Ferrosilicon, ferromanganese, these are others. And so these are niche businesses. They're well established, and we feel comfortable in that space. We don't think that there's a hugely expanding demand, but there is a steady demand, and we're happy to be there. You know, it's, you can think of this as being almost like an industrial mineral, because half the cost is power, electricity, and we're close to a cheap source of power in the form of hydropower, which has very low transmission costs to get to us because it's close by. The other main costs are either ones that the whole world, any producer bears, like a bit of coking coal, or they are costs which vary from locality to locality, and insofar as they're variable costs like that, labor is very cheap in Bosnia, in the European context, and so we're going to be highly competitive producers.
Is there anything further you would like to add, Andrew?
No, I think that people should see this as another symptom of our move towards revenue-producing assets and revenue-producing activities away from simple exploration. And our revenue-producing activities at Red Rock at the moment include the holding in Jupiter, where we, if you take the distribution that's coming in September of 240,000 and the 250,000 and the distribution that came in the spring, that's over £800,000 of distribution in less than a year. So that's a source of revenue. You've got our gold royalties and interest payments on the promissory note, the sort of loan we made when we sold our gold asset. And those gold royalties from Colombia will start to increase quite substantially, or should do, now that the ball mill there is two ball mills working and starting to buy in material from the surrounding area. We also have a hope that we're going to start getting some kind of revenue from our oil interests in the southern United States. So we have several revenue-producing interests already, one of which, the Jupiter, may be partially converted into a capital asset, or even wholly converted. This is adding another, we think, quite stable, not too metal cyclical source of steady cash flow and revenue to the mix. And that, we think, will greatly strengthen us. And if you put these assets and these revenue streams together, we can increasingly create the picture of a quite stable, growing, underpriced company. When we think that when we listed, we were about the cheapest cost listing ever on AIM, and we were a complete midget. To have gone from there to here is through a couple of quite bad downturns in the market. And I said that not just commodities, but also in the environment, you know, on AIM, we're happy to be here. And what we want in future is, A, to sort of cushion slightly the impact of downturns in commodity markets, but also to eliminate the effect of a second cyclical market superimposed on the first, which is cyclical. In other words, when AIM allows you to raise money, it's quite easy. When there's a kind of famine on AIM, capital is hard to raise across the board, then to be a non-revenue producing country, like a lot of companies on AIM, makes you particularly vulnerable. So we are trying to take two vulnerabilities down to, say, half of vulnerability. And that's the journey we've been on and are still on. And this is a good piece in the jigsaw. It looks cheap in itself, but it also builds that picture, which will create a more stable company.
Andrew, thank you very, very much for your time today. We look forward to following the future news flow.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. Remember to visit our website for more news and other podcasts at www.share-talk.com.